Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Welcome to episode 35. Holy I can't shit. Believe it either.
That's quite something, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh my God. This time, we're going to be talking about Michael Mann's 2004 neo-noir thriller.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Oh, he's straight away with the big guns. I like it.
As you can hear from that reaction, it is a personal favourite of the pod. So
certainly
is, we're going to be talking about that. Martin will fill us in on some how homoerotic he feels towards Tom Cruise.
I'm going to hear quite a lot of... I can't remember which one it is.
No.
Oh, God, I ruined that, didn't I?
Try again. Well,
is it?
Has that...
There we go. I need to label my keyboard.
Right, well, we'll just let that linger for a wee second, yep. And you can listen to the tune and we'll start.
Hi guys.
Hello.
Evening.
Aye.
You been working hard this week, Baz?
Just a bit, mate, aye. Mm. You know what I mean? Being a rock star and all that.
Fucking hell, man. Totally. What
was your kind of, your green room request?
My green room request?
Yes. Oh,
well, it was...
Did you want 1,000 blue M&Ms?
Aye. That's it, man. Aye, a big bag of peanuts so I could kill myself before the show.
Well, that's the episode over then.
No, I didn't really have any, so as long as there was some...
No Mariah Carey-esque kind of golden toilet seat hangs or something.
15 pugs?
No, certainly not. Just a big a fridge full of cold beer was all that I really cared for on that day. So,
on most days?
On most days, to be fair, aye, exactly. So,
aye, Baz is only one with a pint the night. Well, two-thirds of a pint, but, you know, we'll let him off.
I'll be very specific in my description of what I'm drinking. So I'm drinking Guinness, but not in the usual sad kind of way where you've got, like... 3/4 of your whatever pint glass you've got in the house filled. I've took inspiration for Ross, because Ross is exactly the type of person who would buy a 440ml glass so that he could take an ordinary can and fill it up. So that's what I've done. I'm drinking a 440ml glass, and do you know what? It feels great.
I'll tell you something, for a wee kind of sidetrack here, I don't like drinking Guinness in the house because I feel it's kind of like the same way I don't really cook steaks in the house. I like it to be a treat. I like it to be perfect.
Nah, I can get down with that, definitely. I have the same feeling majority of the time. But just in the mood for that iron. Maybe I'm depleted or something.
I need the iron.
That's exactly what it is.
It's better talk about films and that, eh?
Films and that?
So we're here, eh?
So we're doing Collateral, directed by Michael Mann, starring Tom Cruise, Jamie Foxx, Mark Ruffalo, Javier Bardem, Jada Pinkett Smith.
That's pretty much it.
Peter
Barry Shabaka Henley.
Who's that?
Who's Barry Shabaka Henley?
I've no idea.
It's the jazz guy.
Right,
you'll know him.
He's in a bunch of stuff. I just didn't know his name.
He's so brilliant. I just wanted to say it.
So, the budget for this was $65 million.
Yep.
And it grossed $220 million. You can look at that in a couple of ways. I think for what is a 15, probably R-rated in America, it's all right. It's nothing special, but it's not terrible either.
For a Michael Mann film, it's probably...
Because he's 86% Rotten Tomatoes,
yep.
71% Metacritic.
Yep.
In terms of the casting, obviously Tom Cruise plays Vincent. obviously, take these with a pinch of salt.
I've heard the stories.
Apparently, it was Russell Crowe's first, because the screenwriter was Australian, so I don't know if that's maybe something to do with it.
Michael Mann as well. Russell Crowe was in The Insider.
That's right.
Was that before this?
Well, aye, that was
1989.
Yeah, I think
You're right, actually. We've got Edward Norton. Apparently, he was offered both roles. I could actually picture him in both.
I'd like
to see him as like a mad kind of assassin.
They decided it was too much like Russell Crowe's actual wife.
Just driving around and kicking fuck out of people.
We've got Leonardo DiCaprio, probably a bit too early for him. And I'd like to see something like that now for him. That'd be cool.
It's weird, this kind of role he's never really done, isn't it? In terms of like a badass assassin type, he's not done that.
No, he's only really a bad guy in Django, isn't he, really?
Aye.
Colin Farrell,
could see that.
Maybe a bit too early for him as well.
But he
went to do Miami Vice with Michael Mann.
Yep.
As for Max, once Cruise got the role, Cuba Gooding Jr. campaigned for it, but Michael Mann didn't want it because they worked together on Jerry Maguire.
Yep.
Adam Sandler was
he was the original. They were going to go for Crowe and Sandler.
I think it was Crowe and Sandler, and then it was Tom and Sandler.
Is it no interesting thinking of an alternate universe where Sandler had got that role?
Because it's the same thing with, Inglourious Basterds, that he was up for the role in that.
Really?
I think there's a few things he's been up for.
Because, obviously he's become a sort of joke, but at the same time, you could see it totally flipping if he had got a role like that, which maybe subverted people.
There's definitely people that respect his abilities.
He's worked with Paul Thomas Anderson in the film the other year, the gambling one. What's that called again? Something Diamond or something like that. What is it?
It's hanging with my mind, but it's amazing.
Yeah.
Hidden Gems.
Aye. He's done loads of stuff that's actually proper acting, even when he played himself as a comedian, well, pretty much himself, but I was a comedian.
Funny people.
Funny
people should.
He can do it, so it depends how he would have played it, see if he'd have went too funny with it.
Aye.
I mean, Jamie Foxx, a lot of people don't even remember now that he was really a comedian.
Aye.
He probably through Michael Mann.
There's a touch
of
comedy in it anyway.
I'm trying to think what Jamie Foxx would have been in before this.
He was in Ali.
He was in Ali. His big break was
Ray.
Any Given Sunday, I think.
Was it not Ray?
Well,
Ray was the same year as this, because they get nominated for both Oscars for both acting categories.
It's talking about comedy, most of the comedy in this film comes from Cruise, so.
Yeah, aye.
you get the comedian in the film, and it's like we're talking about Adam Sandler possibly being in it. Cruise is just like, that'll be funny enough.
In terms of like other casting things, I don't think it really matters about anyone else, just because it's about the end, isn't it?
Nah, definitely, man. So there's your cast, there's your film. Did you know that our old mate Frank was involved in it?
Frank
Darabont?
No.
No, I didn't, actually.
Aye, so I could be getting this wrong, but did he not buy the script?
I think the guy who...
It's an Australian guy, right? Another who
Stuart
knew him.
And he took it to Darabont.
Bought the script, I think, or maybe took it, or whatever. Obviously, got the funding for it, I believe. Have you heard the story about the guy who wrote it?
About how he came up with it? Aye. I love stuff like that, man. Go for it.
It's just something that we've all kind of thought. Like, I think, how many scripts or how many ideas for films occur in the back seat of cars or in moving vehicles or something, when you've just got that chance to sort of look at the world around you. It's a guy, just, I think he was 12 or 13 or something like that.
He was older.
No, I think it was something.
Was he driving a taxi? Was that no? I thought that was.
I thought he was in the taxi. I think the idea was that he just thought, this guy's just chatting away to me, and I could be anybody. I could be going to do anything.
Aye.
And going to come up the idea, obviously, like I could be someone who's always ready to go and kill people or whatever. And the guy would have no idea. It's a cool idea.
I love stuff like that. Just like we were talking about James Cameron. He had a dream about a cyborg, and that's it.
A fever dream.
Took
some mushrooms and then spawned the highest grossing action film of all time. Aye. Brilliant. The angels sang, and the men and people of Earth, they did rejoice, because for once I've got the easiest plot I think we've ever done, maybe.
Aye.
This is a high concept, one sentence.
Aye.
God, don't put me under that pressure. It's such an easy plot, you put me under pressure already. Plus I've got the added no excuse of only having finished my first beer. So here we go. So Collateral tells the story of two main characters. We'll start with Max, played by Jamie Foxx, who is an unknowing, fastidious and precise, as Queen would say, taxi driver, somebody who's got plans for his life and that kind of stuff, picks up Tom Cruise just as he would any other person, and then spends the entire night in his company. It turns out Tom Cruise is a contract killer, and let's just say that he's taken on a wild ride. It then turns personal for Max as Cruise ends up, it turns out that his love interest, who he had picked up earlier that evening, was one of Cruise's targets, which you find out later on in the film. And Max, spoiler alert, kills Cruise, and that's it.
Succinct.
Happy with that.
I mean,
take the last sentence, but
hey, if anybody is listening to this and have not watched the film,
I think people know by now.
You should know by now.
Right off the bat.
Is that the quickest ever plot summary we've done?
I think me, myself, and I was quicker, wasn't it?
Was it? What did you say?
That lasted about 90 minutes.
Aye, and the podcast itself lasted for 4 hours. Mm-hmm.
That was basically a table reading.
That's exactly what it was. Aye. Right, aye, anyway, that's it.
Vincent.
Yep.
It's a cool name.
Very cool name.
It's very a bit.
Not Vince.
Not
Vince. Vinny.
Not Vince or Vin. Vincent.
Vincent.
Mm. Aye, so the first time you see him, he's with Jason Statham.
The Eggman?
He's actually got a surprising amount of hair in this.
Well, back when he... Aye, exactly. You can date him because he's got like some sort of coverage.
He's like a kind of... One of those old redwoods in like America. You look at the rings. Aye.
That's The Rock though, isn't it? Like, with The Rock, you need to carbon date him.
Aye.
Sorry.
By the way, the day's the 25th anniversary of The Rock's debut in WWE, so happy anniversary, Rock.
We'll need to do another fucking wrestling related. Some excuse to get hundreds of fucking samples.
Just where, like, do we need an excuse? Vincent.
Very stylish man.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Is he though?
Right. So the thing is, I love the suit he wears, but needs a black belt. I was noticed at one time he looks a bit daft without a belt.
He's gone for almost like a more. It's like, I don't even know how to describe it. It's like this is kind of what I was thinking. See, throughout the whole thing, it kind of looks like he hasn't finished dressing himself. Because you think about it, right? He's a contract killer, he's on the move, blah, blah, blah. He maybe has to change clothes at an airport, blah, blah, the rest of it. He's maybe been like, he's forgot the tie and he's forgot the belt.
No, but he wears a tie, like, that takes it off.
Does he? I don't know, it just kind of looks like...
Don't talk shite. He looks incredible.
I'm not saying
it. He wears a tie and then he takes it off after he kills the first guy.
Let's be honest, this is like, in terms of Tom Cruise sexiness, this is peak.
That is peak.
Because Tom Cruise is one of these guys, right? If you ask your missus, is Tom Cruise hot, right? It's going to be a 50-50. Like, it's one of these guys, right? He's a Hollywood leading man, the biggest names of all time. But it's always 50-50. I think the smarminess reeks out of him. And like, they've had to make him look a bit rough for him to look like, I don't know, to take him seriously, if that makes sense.
Because he's an alien. Vincent's smarmy, though.
Aye, that's what I'm saying. But Tom Cruise himself is an alien. So therefore, like, he's going to shut us down, isn't he? Maybe he would want to be an alien, since we know all aliens anyway. What's the thing with that? Well, we don't get down that road.
Nah, don't get down that road.
Right, anyway, back to the topic. I think they've had to make him look a bit sort of... just a bit sort of rough around the edges to actually get him to that stage of, like...
But I disagree, you know?
Do you think he's meant to be... Because I was watching it and trying to think, and the way he is in this, and he doesn't want people to see him or know who he is.
Mm-hmm.
So is he wearing a grey suit, you know, and trying to be, you know, grey? Like, if you were trying to describe him to the police...
That's true. Yeah,
it'd be really vague.
Grey hair, grey suit,
average height, average build,
average height.
I mean, well, that's a genius bit of casting as well, getting Tom Cruise and Jamie Foxx.
I know, they're both wee
5'7" and 5'9".
Aye,
is Jamie? Did you know?
I looked it up because I was like, if they get Tom Cruise on stilts again. Right. But it turns out Jamie Foxx is quite
good. I was actually wondering whether Foxx is really...
He'll definitely have a couple of inserts in the heels though, won't he? Right. We'll wear Tom.
Right. Oh, no the running parts, fucking hell, man. This is...
Oh, he's sprinting in this is off the charts.
It's peak
terrifying
sprinting,
looking.
He does. Yeah, look,
can you imagine you looked up and he was running towards
he runs
you like that?
He runs like fucking T-1000, only he's an actual man. This is
Vincent is a character, right? Let's have a look at like the assassin character in films. I mean, there's so many. I think this one itself is so different though. I think that's maybe one of the things that's made it kind of like...
Because he's cool and charming and funny.
Well, maybe not even so much that. I think it's just his attitude. Like, he's very flippant. He's very, like, he's steadfast in his beliefs and that kind of stuff. He's, like, he's somebody who is, in some ways, like, a bit of a dick. But, I don't know, they've deliberately made him a wee bit more, like, business like.
He doesn't say anything that's really wrong.
No, he doesn't, and that's the point, obviously, and we'll go on to talk about some of those sort of themes in it, but like as the assassin character, for the reasons that we've just laid out, I think this is why this kind of sticks out, is because he's not the black suited earpiece I'm a hitman.
Who doesn't he speak stone faced?
Ah, nah, it's none of that. It's a guy who, as we see at the start of the film, is doing a job.
Yeah.
And it's like he clearly treats it in the same way almost as Jamie Foxx treats his own job.
Mm-hmm. Nah, that's exactly... I think that's why there's some sort of... almost a strange mutual respect
100%.
There. You know, see, especially after that first taxi ride.
Yeah.
You know, when Jamie Foxx says, right, I can get you there in 7 minutes.
Yeah.
And Tom Cruise is like, Vincent's like, 7 minutes, not six, not eight.
Aye.
And, mm-hmm. and then he gets him there. The exact, you know, I think he's got a bit of respect, you know, for
definitely, man.
Oh, like I read a wee kind of tiny theory, and it's that he's actually this is going to sound daft, but he's dickishness is like turned up a bit at the very start.
Ah, 100%.
And apparently that's because he was testing Max to see how he'd react to like a dick, whether he'd be aggressive and turn around and go, "Ah, what the fuck, you didn't get in my car or something like that."
Because
He's more of a dick at the start with his 7 minutes.
Oh, definitely.
That.
Yeah.
It's almost as if he's testing how much can I manipulate.
Aye.
Because when you, guy. 100%. Because you can see that obviously one of the sort of integral arcs to the film is Max being having his character tested and then sort of changing to suit that. Mm. So you know, the film obviously relies heavily upon Cruise pushing his buttons, and then that sort of seemingly combusting into something else, but then Max reacting to that. So we all know that when things go wrong, like the trained killer, the professional guy, he's going to be fine.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like they don't know what Max is going to do. They don't know how he's going to react to things. So there's several points in the film where it goes off the rails, and those are Max elements.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Because you would know that there'd be no film if it was just a guy kind of Danish. I mean, he's obviously phenomenal at it. He's only been doing it 6 years though. I mean, like,
well, what he says is,
what's the sort of job, the lifespan
he's been working in the private sector for 6 years.
Oh.
So that means that he's probably like
had a Facebook page and all that, doing it publicly.
He's probably like ex-CIA or special ops or something that. You know, the guy's probably got about 15 passports and
nobody knows his name. Been about with Seagal and all that. Ex-special
forces. Do you know his name is apparently Vincent Collateral?
That's not.
Swear to God.
No, it's not.
No way.
No, the title comes from... Jamie Foxx says, "I'm Collateral."
I know that.
His name isn't Vincent Collateral.
Michael Mann and Cruise created like a big backstory. By the way, this is for the IMDb trivia, so some dickhead is going to be out, but it's still funny.
Some fucking 7-year-old. Like,
can imagine actually
just made that up.
Can imagine? I don't think I'd like it if he came out and said my name is Vincent Collateral. I'd not turn it off.
Oh, if you just caught a glimpse, his passport photo or something like that.
Let's go through some of his funny moments that you mentioned.
There's definitely some comedy. I mean, it's obviously a gritty, like you say, neo-noir. Like there's a real edge to it, but they cut the tension quite a lot with Vincent. several points. I mean, one of the ones that always sticks out to me is the wee pep talk he gives Jamie Foxx when his boss is giving him shit out of the radio.
Oh, it's so good, man.
But then he kind of takes over, and then once he's... You know what? It's almost like a father-son moment, because he tells him what to do. Max doesn't have the balls to do it. He takes it over himself, shows him, and then Max does it. So it's like, you know...
Vincent's really... He's more like a kind of therapist.
Aye.
That's what it's like. It's exactly. One big therapy session.
Yes.
In one night.
Drive the cab up your fat ass. That one.
Oh, that one. Yeah. Aye, that's good.
My favourite funny bit is when just after the first kill, and Max is obviously he's distraught and all that, and they start talking about Rwanda.
Getting the fucking car. Oh, no, that bit, right?
And they start talking about Rwanda, and then Vincent's like, 20 something, like, A million people die before sundown. You throw a hissy fit over some fat Angelino.
Just before that, I loved the bit after the guys landed in the car.
Is it getting the fucking car back?
Well, he's kind of Jamie Foxx is speaking to him, and he's like, did you do that? Like, did you kill him? And Vincent says, I shot him, but I think the bullets in the fall killed him.
That's it. But is it? What does he say after that? He then says something else.
He says, Jamie Foxx says, you pushed him and I didn't push him, he fell.
Aye, but so then does he say something like, oh, there's just a bit where there's this like funny pause where he's like,
he says
some sarcastic and then just goes, get in the fucking car.
Aye, he's going like that, you're not going to tell anyone, right?
That's it.
And Jamie Foxx is like, I swear, so you're not going to tell anyone, get in the fucking car.
that's the one, aye, quality.
Aye, he's got like a bleak view of the world, which I guess...
Oh, he's a nihilist.
Aye, that's a good way to put it.
The guy's basically existential dread on legs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He's just, he probably hates everyone he meets, even though I think he does like Max.
I don't think so. No. I think it's more to do with the fact that, like, it's just, there's these wee threads in the film that are obviously all about morality and judgment and fate and all these kind of things, and especially death, obviously the theme of death, but it's, I think he comes at it from the point of view of someone who's just accepted death as like a daily occurrence. It's just a thing that happens to people.
Mm-hmm.
So in that view, he's trying to like tone it down and make it as mundane as possible.
It does,
which could be a coping mechanism, but at the same time, I can see why you would think that. Like, there's that certain element of it where you would maybe go like, oh, he's just a hard ass and blah blah blah.
No, I know that, but he's one of the people who hates the general public. Like, he says it, like, he says that, to tell you the truth, whenever I get to LA, I can't wait to leave, that kind of stuff.
I don't think it's much to do with the public, though. I think it's just like, what does he say something after that, though?
It's just, the guy's getting that, it just feels like life is insignificant. That it doesn't matter, you know. At one point he says to him, well, we're just a kind of...
specks in the galaxy or
something. Yeah, floating through space, all that kind of stuff. He's obviously a massive narcissist as well.
Aye, 100%.
As well as being like a sociopath.
Yeah,
He thinks he's better than everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Even though he does what he does. But he's still like... the one of the best aspects of the thing is that he generally like ends up caring about Max a wee bit.
That's
like, he wants Max to get his successful limo company, because he does think he's going to then spoiler kill him.
That's it. Aye.
So
that's it.
He's like, he does the thing with the boss, he gives him like a few pep talks and all that, and that's kind of the best part of the film, isn't it?
The small moments of bromance an otherwise utterly horrific experience for Max. Like, do you know what I mean? I mean, so we should probably come in, because we could talk all night about Cruise as Vincent, but we should probably bring Ruffalo into the equation here. So we should mention that there's obviously Max and Vincent are the two main characters. However, there's obviously the police presence within this. So you know, you wouldn't have much of a film if there wasn't that third element here after that first kill. So basically, body falls on top of the car, sprays glass everywhere, blood everywhere, blah blah blah. Extremely professional killer, but has made a bit of a faux pas there.
He does it a couple of times. He's not perfect. And so, I kind of noticed that more this time watching
let's be honest, that's for plot progression rather than anything else. It's like...
Nah, I don't like jazz.
No, I mean...
He's improvising.
He's playing
jazz.
Yeah.
But the way they portray it at the start is as if, like, kill, like, no evidence, all that kind of stuff.
Exactly.
But he's not really, he's quite...
Yeah. There's moments. So obviously, what leads you to the police element coming in is the first kill itself. You know, you get introduced to Mark Ruffalo, and the other guy who's in loads of things as well, but I can't
remember. Peter Berg, he's a director. Mostly a director.
Mark Ruffalo with the greasiest hair.
Aye. It's proper hangman levels.
I think...
what do you call them? Skeet Ulrich levels.
Skeet hair.
If there's a grease level, he's a 10. This is maybe a 9.5.
And it is on his skull, man. It doesn't look like it's got a move.
It makes it worse because every other film I think I've seen Ruffalo in, he's got that kind of curly
he's got like
hair.
Shaggy hair. Aye, curly hair.
It's just slicked back.
The cholo goatee and that makes it worse as well.
And the earring.
I am not a big fan of that look.
No. Because do you know that...
It looks like an orc.
Do you know the reason why I was like... See, I was hitting it and I was like... So I was expecting Ruffalo to turn up and I was thinking, why did they not get a Latino person to play this character, right? But he's no. His name's Fanning. His second name's Fanning, so he's no Latino, but he just wants to look Latino.
That always irked me a wee bit. He's definitely doing like a Latino thing there, and it's like...
But that's probably... Like more of a,
is that him undercover?
Yeah, I think it's more a kind of an undercover type thing.
You can pass as Mexican.
I know, you'd look at him and go, right, good.
You can pass as Mexican, mate. Get a goatee, slick your hair back, you'll be fine.
We'll come to Fox then, so let's talk about another couple of wee mini characters. So you've got Jada Pinkett Smith. She's quite charming at the start. I like her at the start.
I think that scene with the two of them is brilliant. Like, see the scene with them.
It's really not forced, it's nice.
It's got a great flow to it, but also I think just the dialogue is. I mean, I'll go on to describe some tropes and things I don't like about action movies, but I think at that point in the film, there's nothing really telling you this is going to be an all guns blazing action film.
For that scene in the taxi, that could be like straight out a romantic film.
That's what I'm saying.
I was going to say we'll get to the tune that's playing, but we'll get to that.
Oh, of course, right. She is good in it.
She is good. Yeah. At the end, she doesn't really have to do much. She's just running about. But at the start, she's
still running high heels, mate. Come on.
I know. She looks. I don't know how they do it. But at the start, she comes across as like a bit of a bitch at the start, and then Max kind of pulls her. Mm-hmm.
The best thing about that scene is
hard exterior down.
If you were to say to someone without them watching this, this kind of high level prosecutor, you know, she gets in a taxi and at the end, like, she quite likes the taxi driver and gives him her business card to kind of call her. You'd be like, that's a bit unrealistic.
Totally agree. But he's so nice and charming.
The way how charming he is, and just the way that scene flows, it doesn't. Well, feel
I was, it's funny though because I was saying to Sharon watching it, like, is it not interesting how like he plays quite a? He's obviously like, you know, for people listening who've watched the film, he's obviously playing sort of, I wouldn't say downtrodden, but he's quite.
He's a loner.
He's insecure. He's doesn't have much self esteem. He has these dreams or whatever, but you can tell he doesn't believe in himself. He doesn't want to, like, all of that, right? But I think it's interesting considering how Jamie Foxx in real life is like this ridiculously intelligent, like erudite guy. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just one of the things. I think people like that tend to play those characters really well, and there's just something about that performance that's just absolutely brilliant.
Nah.
Because it doesn't, he could quite easily come across as if he's just dumbing it down. As if he's just been like, okay, me,
genuinely,
I'm just a taxi
even
driver.
Even though Vincent's so cool, it'd be so easy to actually root for Vincent in this.
100%.
But Max is so nice.
It gets to a point where you're just so raging at Vincent.
And then, like, he's just a nice, you know, you want him to.
Oh, you want him to pull through.
So we'll come on to him now, so we'll talk about him. Like, Javier Bardem's in it for 2 minutes, he's great.
He phones it in.
Does he he doesn't know how
fucking,
he phones it in, he's too good.
He phones it in, man.
It does a wee Humpty Dumpty speech.
Oh.
What's our thing
he
talks about?
Do you believe in Humpty Dumpty, Barry?
He talks about the Mexican Christmas thing that comes and steals the kids and stuff.
Pedro Negro.
Aye, so we've talked about Fox already, but obviously he was nominated for Best Supporting Actor for this, wasn't he? In the same year he was nominated for Best Actor for Ray, weren't it?
Mm-hmm.
Nominated for Collateral, just nominated, didn't win, didn't he?
No, he didn't win. It was a strange nomination though, because
he's the main character.
If he's not the kind of actor rather than supporting actor in this, then, I mean, does it make sense?
I know you can't have, like, if it was anyone else but Cruise or Schwarzenegger, it would be...
It's just the way the kind of the Oscars work, though. Like, people campaign in weird categories sometimes.
Can you be nominated twice for Best Actor in the same category in the same year?
I think so. I don't know if it's ever happened, but I think you can. I don't see why not.
I don't see why not, but maybe that's the reason. You know, no. So he's really, really... You do root for him, and it'd be, like you say, it'd be easy, can he? Just because Vincent's so cool, just they want him to do well. Do well, kill folk. Oh, he's doing well, isn't he? Killing him.
He's doing well for himself, that boy.
He's superb.
I think, it is quite a classic kind of... I wouldn't say worn out, but it's a well-used sort of device, which is that you have the love interest... And you kind of forget about it for a while.
Mm-hmm. Totally,
and then it's brought back in such a way that you go, oh shit, like, oh fuck, like, oh no, we forgot about that. And but I don't know, I feel as if, like, there's a part of me that in this film, I think it feels a wee bit forced. Just the
I knew you would say this.
That just after the crash, like, he looks at the laptop screen.
I knew you were, like, going to say this, and I prepared a massive rant about it.
It's not my pure shite, by the way, but
because you can do this with any film in the world ever.
I know you can.
I feel like it gets away with it because, like, fate's made such a big deal of. Taking control of your own fate.
Sure.
I mean, like, Max as a character, he's not really getting any agency. He's just floating through life. He's getting ordered about by the dispatch and directed by his customers and everything. And it's not till, like, that crash where he actually
takes control.
Yeah.
Aye.
He takes control when he steals the briefcase.
Yeah, but that's kind of
off the cuff.
It's almost kind of half-hearted, really. And I was thinking about it, and I think it's possibly more to do with getting Vincent away from his mother than anything else. It's like, I think so. I think it's like between that and the whole, he's obviously got a kind of strained relationship with her.
Of course.
Yeah. Like, he doesn't tell the truth about what she thinks, that he's, like, got a limo company and everything. So just that kind of the shame building up in him there.
He just wanted a way to end it.
He can't just run away. Because if he runs away, look, he's not got anything in Vincent. Vincent could do anything.
I don't know if it is that. I would say that I think he puts her in more danger by doing what he did.
Probably, aye.
I don't know. It's definitely off the cuff. You can see it in his face.
If you think of it, what Ross said, I think it's literally just a way of getting out of the situation, which also sticks two fingers up at Vincent. Because
it's an instinctual thing.
I don't think it's
anything
to do with sticking two fingers up.
Oh, it definitely is. No, because if you think that entire... You kidding me? That entire scene, Vincent, is that I'm the perfect... Well, and your son, and they're, like, she's ripping the piss out of him in front of him, and Vincent's playing up to that.
Especially after the jazz club, because Max is pretty gutted about how that all went down.
Mm-hmm.
So he's letting a really angry and everything about that. And then all this comes in, and it's just pure instinct, get out of there.
I'm
just going to grab this.
Yep.
But I don't want this to keep going on. If I get rid of this, then, you know, and Vincent, as much as he's like a kind of contract killer, he doesn't seem like the kind of person, okay, later he does say, you know, if you don't go in there and do this, I'm going to go and kill your mother. But
I don't think he would have.
No, I don't think so. See, for somebody that's like a nihilist, he'd probably not see the... If he killed Max, that would be it. He just wants to use his emotions against him. It's the same when the police kind of pull them over and he's like, oh, he's probably got kids at home and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, oh, don't you dare open that trunk. I don't think you've got the space for another two type thing.
Brilliant. Hi folks, just wanted to interrupt this episode to let you know that you can get in touch with us at uglypulpodyssey@gmail.com. Whether you have any suggestions for films that you'd like to hear us cover in upcoming episodes, or if you have some different takes, opinions or theories about films that we've covered thus far, we'd love to hear them. That address again is uglypulpodyssey@gmail.com. So don't be a stranger, send us an email, we'd love to discuss your feedback and thoughts right here on the podcast. Speaking of which, let's get back to the episode.
Kind of touched on it already, but let's go into a wee bit more detail. We've said that Jamie Foxx was Oscar nominated. Deserved, do you think?
Absolutely, aye.
Are you?
Probably, aye. I can't really say it, but I would say probably in the sense that I think the character in this film is probably the toughest to play.
Mm. I think he's got a good arc.
Aye, he does, mm-hmm. aye, he does.
For somebody at the start who's kind of quite meek and, aye. You know, to somebody at the end who's quite decisive and...
Aye. It's definitely, you're right, it's so much easier to play Vincent. Cruz is having a fucking blast.
Oh, 100%. Aye. It's playing right into his fucking ego into aye. It. Aye, absolutely. Totally.
That's an interesting thing about Cruz as well. I think he does brilliant and he should do more villains.
He should, man.
Really, definitely.
I mean, he's done this and he's done Interview with the Vampire. Yep. He's played some other characters who have got kind of, like, bad kind of... features
like Magnolia and that,
of course. Yeah, but out and out villains, those are probably the only two. He should be doing more.
He should have been nominated as well, if you ask me. But
I'm honestly surprised that he's never turned up as a Bond villain or something.
Oh, he's too big, man. It's like having Arnold Schwarzenegger as a fucking Batman villain.
I don't think that he's too big. I think that he's reached a stage where he's dining out on right. He's never really been typecast, but I think he is. I think he pretty much is now.
Yeah, it's probably because, isn't he, yeah. Which is fine.
He's allowed himself to dig too far into the Mission Impossible, too far into the running, I'm sprinting and I am the hero. And it's like...
Hanging off of things.
Fallout is one of the best action films ever made.
No, I'm not slagging. I'm just saying he's too far into that now where he couldn't make a U-turn now. I don't think he's... Unless something happens, you know, in the next sort of 10 years or so, it becomes a. I know he's
like a fucking genetic freak and all that, but there will be a time where he can't do this anymore. So maybe we'll see
he doesn't have to, like Vincent. I suppose, even though he is obviously a strong, like sort of athletic guy and all that stuff, proved that you don't need to be an all out fucking running, jumping thing to actually be scary. Or no, scary is the wrong word, but to be a good villain in that traditional sense, I think Cruise has definitely got it just through his smugness and through his sort of just his turn of phrase and stuff like that, like in the way he can carry something by looking kind of.
He's a dick.
A dick. Yeah.
I think he can deliver though. Some of those lines that he delivers, I don't think other people would get away with it.
No chance.
Oh, you kidding me? Oh my god!
And especially as well, you know. I think he does well here in the fact that you like him, but you hate him at the same time. You know?
Like, if you met him, you'd be like, ah, that guy's a dick.
Aye.
Do you know, I think the best bit of acting for him is when he's talking about his father, and he's like, his father's like, he beat me and all that. And so he goes, he tells Jamie Foxx, he's like, I killed him when I was 12. And Jamie Foxx is like,
he busts out laughing.
And then he goes, no, he died of liver disease. He's right back down it. And he kind of like bites his lip a wee bit, and he's like, he's getting a bit kind of melancholic about it, and he's thinking about it, and he's showing a wee bit of emotion.
Aye, absolutely.
There's a few moments of that though, because you've got that bit, the bit when he kills the jazz guy.
He feels bad. Aye, he does. Aye.
And then he has this kind of, when they see the coyotes.
Yep.
He's got this kind of strange look.
Yep.
In his face.
So the coyote thing is basically in like.
Well, it's obviously some sort of. Shoehorned in a fable or something like that.
It's like, what do you call it? It's a Native American thing that if you see a coyote, you should turn back because it's going to lead to your death or something like that. Right?
Apparently, though.
Which I think me and you might be in the same page here. I didn't like that part.
Apparently, though, it was just. It wasn't something planned.
It was just coyotes there.
They were filming and they seen coyotes and Michael Mann filmed them.
If that's true, then...
He was like, I'm going to put this in the film.
If that's true, then fair dues, aye. But
it's not like written into the script or anything.
Okay, well, that seems a bit better.
Right? Oh, okay, we'll go with that. We'll take it.
I also don't like that Soundgarden tune that's playing at that point.
Fucking does my name.
Audioslave.
Soundgarden, Audioslave.
That's a bad miss. They'll be fucking...
What's he going to do about it?
I don't know. Oh, hey!
Hey, but...
I thought what's he got to do about it? Talk about Chris Cornell because he's dead.
No, I was talking about Ross.
All right.
It sounded a bit like you were saying, what's he got to do about it?
I regretted it.
Oh well. Are you on to next person?
I don't like the Audioslave tune. It's a bit, can he?
It's too overbearing. It's too overbearing.
It is. It's proper. Just like, fuck, this is a.
That one? Yeah. I mean, sounds like he's taking a shit when he's done it.
For MDLs in the film, it's not even. I mean, the next kind of biggest character is Ruffalo, and he's not really in it that much.
Yeah,
he's maybe getting about 3 or 4 scenes. You know, it's just not anyone.
Who's
else's
the guy?
Film.
Who's the guy that plays a? Who's the guy that plays like one of the main sort of police guys?
He gets shot.
Quite a chubby guy.
He's
hilarious, man. He looks so out of place in this film. Like, I don't know what it is. There's a bit where he's just constantly looks just like that, and he's just trying to run.
He's the proper.
It's just funny.
FBI versus LAPD hanging they hate each other. No.
Yes, the feds.
The feds.
The LAPD. They want everything, and after the feds, and the feds are stealing all their stuff.
Aye.
Shocking. The way they're treating the feds.
It's mad because see when I'm at work, see if somebody was coming up to me all the time and.
Saying I'll do that work for you.
I know.
Please do it. Help yourself.
I'll go and get a coffee. This is best job ever.
All these guys want to do is wake up at 4 a.m. in their swanky apartments whilst they're still groggy, answer on the phone, and go on a case. That's all they want to do every day.
After they down a miniature vodka.
Yes, that's all they want to do every day.
Since we've talked about it a wee bit now, do you just want to jump on the soundtrack?
Can I, before we do that? I want to award the best minor bit of acting in this
film.
Here
we go.
So, after the big crash, when Jamie Foxx robs the guy's phone,
yes,
it's probably one of the best.
Oh, the way he reacts when he throws the gun
ever seen.
Quality, isn't it?
So good. I hope that guy gets some more work out of
it. He probably sprained quite a few muscles then.
That should be in his like kind of his acting reel.
Aye, I'm sure.
Oh, it was good. Aye.
I'm sure that's the only thing in his acting reel.
It's really, really good. Definitely, man. So, quick to wrap this up, Jada Pinkett Smith, she get pass marks?
Aye, everyone gets.
Mm-hmm. I don't think MD's bad.
No.
Matt Ruffalo just looks weird.
Aye,
he's not bad, he just looks weird.
If he looked normally bigger.
They fucked it with that fucking.
I don't know whose idea it was. It's fucking daft.
They literally got like the guy, like the makeup artist, the costume people out of college who went, right, he's a Latino undercover. What do you want him to look like? And the guy's like, let me think.
Get the brow cream.
Leather jacket, earring, done.
Muscle killer thing.
Aye.
The soundtrack's.
Interesting.
Interesting.
Right.
Because there isn't really a score that much, but that's the same for most Michael Mann films.
Yeah.
The first tune you get is the really noticeable tune you get is Hands of Time by Groove Armada, It just works so well, man. It's so good.
That's a great song, man.
That's when you've got your kind of your LA kind of helicopter shots and
loves that shit.
Your kind of like the rat race. Well, not really a rat race because it's during the night, but you get what I mean.
Of course, hustle and bustle.
And then we get to. The jazz part, so I'm sure you have stuff to talk about with that.
We certainly do.
It's not real jazz.
Talk about the guy playing it. Everyone hates that for some reason. See the abuse that guy gets.
I'm literally not talking about anything. Like the soundtrack I think is it's very like we're gonna go in more detail, but we'll just keep it to this. And this is one of the things that's just so Michael Mann, which is that combination of really, really striking, beautiful cinematic score, and then like driving a lot of 4/4 like driving beats accompanied by a car or a helicopter or something that just denotes general coolness.
Aye, it's just cool,
and it works a charm. I mean, not to take any away from you, Big Mick, but like if you've got a helicopter flying over LA at night, the fucking I don't know, Teletubbies Christmas fucking CD.
I had the idea where you're going
would sound great. It would look cool as fuck. Do you know what I mean? Like a large part of that is just what's happening on screen, and there's various bits that are kind of like just. I mean, obviously one of the bits because down in legend for us that we've always spoke about the Fever nightclub thing is like it's just classic, isn't it? Paul Longfield.
Ready, steady, go.
So you've got that mix of stuff that's just very Michael Mann, very like. Metropolitan electronic music and stuff like that, and a score by James Newton Howard, which is also brilliant, it has to be said.
It's good, but it's just not there very much. It's a really quiet.
It's there at important moments.
It's a really, really quiet film, like, yep. And then you get like the
the proper mm-hmm. Like the gunshots are like the loudest gunshots in any film, yes. like ever.
They're in the middle of LA, like which must just be definitely loud at all times. Yet these gunshots are.
And
an assassin that doesn't use a fucking silencer.
I mean, it does
count as a jazz guy.
I know, but I'm talking about when he fucking pops the two homies.
That was just kind of though. Wasn't expected. You homie.
Tom, please never say homie again.
No one should be able to get away with that. Like, that is just so bad, but it's also brilliant. So.
So that was kind of off the cuff. So he's obviously not got his silencer ready, but also it kind of adds into. I wrote it down.
Oh.
Cruise says that Ellie is sprawled out and disconnected.
Yes.
So, and his whole story about someone on the kind of, was it the M whatever train?
MTA.
The guy who dies in
Nazis. For 6 hours. So it's pretty much like, you know, gunshots will go off, people don't care type thing.
You can picture that in Ellie.
Mm-hmm. Well, I never thought about that.
Actually, apparently, this is another kind of daft thing I read that. You know, when Fox throws the briefcase over,
mm-hmm.
apparently that's like a basically the Harry fucking gangland LA.
Right.
And they had to like shut it off for 2 days for Tom Cruise running up.
That's where we do our deals. Huh? What are you talking about?
No deals, just kept shooting each other.
Oh, right. Oh, sorry. Yeah.
So the Crips were patiently waiting.
Patiently waiting to get back in the playground.
When's Tam going to finish so that we can have a gun battle?
Fucking hell, right up.
Here's a fun game that you can play with collateral. How many Michael mannerisms you might say?
Michael mannerisms, I like
that. when did you think of that?
Actually, right there, didn't
you? That's superb, well done.
How many Michael mannerisms can we spot in this film? I would like to start with...
Okay.
We'll just go around the table and see what... Mm. I would like to start with no one owning curtains or blinds of any kind. Never in any Michael Mann film does anyone have curtains or blinds. Like, just always at night, just no matter what you're doing, walking about, there it is, Ellie in the background.
It's like Tarantino with his feet. That's his...
Right, there you... Wait, you got a Michael Mannerism there, Roscoe?
Neon. Loads of neon.
I don't know if it's individual ones, but it's... I think Ross might disagree with it. Folk might say Heat, but I think it's the most Michael Mannerism film of his career.
I think so.
We may as well talk about it, and it's because of the cameras, like...
I would like to add that you guys have obviously no thought about your Michael Mannerisms. I've got a couple of mere Michael Mannerisms. Another one would be having giant shootouts in extremely crowded public places where no civilians get hurt.
And also, for some reason, it takes people about 15 minutes to run away from them.
That's right. Either even though they're right next to them. Scattering, everywhere.
People constantly running past them.
That's it.
To be fair, they really like gunshots on a Michael Mannerism, I think.
Definitely. I would also add into that concrete as a Michael Mannerism.
The city as a character.
Yes, 100%. Yeah. And the greyness of the city as a character.
It's grey. The film's grey and orange.
Aye.
Grey and orange look.
It's quite interesting.
You've got the mutual respect between the kind of the good character and the bad character.
That's a Michael Mannerism.
Yeah, that's great in a few of them.
That's a Michael Mannerism.
That's probably...
I mean, also, do you think
fucking hell, that is in so many things,
isn't
it?
Do you think
you've
that,
got Pacino and De Niro,
of course,
you've got
Manhunter.
Miami Vice, I suppose, they'd pay for them, but...
I was going to say, do you think that this is... do you think that there's a... I have a feeling that there's kind of almost a callback to Miami Vice with the way that Tom's dressed.
No, it's a callback to Heat. He's wearing the same.
Oh, it's Neil.
It's Neil. So Neil McCauley.
I didn't realize that.
I think this could almost be in the same universe as Heat.
Oh, definitely.
Because he's wearing like the. I don't know if it's a grey suit. Neil
aye,
it's or
aye, definitely.
So
is
he's
aye.
Got that
got
very
white
very
shirt,
crisp white shirt. It's definitely a.
Yeah.
Aye. And even the fucking grey hair.
Wow. There you go. Aye.
But this does have the kind of the realism as well. He's not one for. Like explosions and stuff for no reason. And you know, it's a lot of it's like real, and see even down to this, see like the Mozambique drill and stuff like that is so good, you know. And this is like pre John Wick.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly.
You know, it's that.
Neil versus Vincent, who wins in a fight?
Vincent.
I don't think Neil would even invite him. He'd be, what does he say?
Be away,
he'd be around the corner or something.
Aye, true, actually. I thought he'd just do a wee, arm it. He'd just dip it.
And we've saw De Niro fighting in The Irishman, so.
some scrapper on the cheese, man. Yeah, so. Funny mess.
I think Tom Cruise would been there.
Tom Cruise just battling 11 daylights at him.
Aye, Michael Mannerisms.
It's an extremely Michael Mann film, this.
Aye, it's the most for me.
To the nth degree.
It's probably and he's definitely the last great it, film.
Oh, definitely. Has he done since?
Public Enemies. Aye, he's
never seen it.
Black Hat. Not sure. I mean, see considering the guy...
He's older than you think, isn't he?
Oh, I mean, I think he's a bit ages with like Ridley Scott and stuff like that. I'm sure he was like... Cause he'd
come well, like 83?
Well, he came over to London and he kind of studied over here and he got his start doing adverts and then into TV. Mm-hmm. And I think he got divorced and then moved back to America, and that's when he got into like kind of doing Miami Vice and stuff.
Let's check. I'd say he's about 76.
I had no idea what
age he is. But the guy, he's only actually made... Like that have went to the cinema, something like 11 films.
Aye, and he's
which
entire lifetime,
is insane.
Aye,
he is 78.
Wow. Oh, go. Jesus Christ! I did not know that. It's interesting for
when you think about it, but though this is 18, 17-year-old. So,
but it's still interesting for a guy to make a film like that in 2004. When you think about it, because it's so much rooted in the '80s and rooted in the aesthetic of. Like late '70s, early '80s films, like especially LA films. Like it's if you look at how Tarantino treats LA, he's more thinking back to his childhood, like the '60s and the '70s. Whereas like for a guy at his age at that point, it's still interesting for him to sort of go back to.
Well, he'd been in his prime at that point.
No, but it's a lot. A lot
I was going to say so in the Rewatchables episode of this, right? They call it like the most LA film of all time, and. It's probably Once Upon a Time in Hollywood now.
It is now, aye.
But I definitely get what they mean by that.
I think it's just because Michael Mann's kind of cornered that market, hasn't he? Like, of the... I mean, with this and Heat, you're... Like, they're not going to get in any more LA than...
Like, when you think about how many... Like, how many you're saying the city's a character, when you think about how many that's the case for New York, which this was originally meant to be in New York, and I'm glad they didn't, because it's 100%. Just... It would just be fucking...
Because
Die Hard 3 wouldn't exist.
Oh, exactly, yeah.
They talk about, you know, certain directors pretty much owning certain cities.
Yep.
So New York, you could say it's either Scorsese or Woody Allen at some point. Exactly. Spike Lee as well. Although I don't know if he'd maybe be more Brooklyn. There's Christopher Nolan, apparently Chicago's his place. And people said that Michael Mann, that's his is LA.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody else has really claimed that.
David Lynch is a bit LA, isn't he?
I would say so. Aye. But he's that kind of
LA in another universe.
Ross Crawford, Craig Nuke.
Right. Now he's just gave away what I do in my Saturday nights.
Ross Crawford does Craig Nuke.
Right, so we'll just get to the look then. So, I mean, this film was notable not just for its brilliance, but for the fact that it was the first film in the cinemas that was filmed with these newfangled HD cameras, which were known as Viper cameras or something like that. Cool name for a camera.
Thompson Viper Film Stream.
Sounds great,
doesn't it?
I like it. A big Thompson Viper there. Now, I was thinking about this a lot, right? And to me, when I first watched the film, I think you had given me it, and it was Blu-ray or DVD, right?
DVD, I think.
So that was the first time I seen it. And by that point, it would have been on an HD screen or something like that, right? But I feel as if maybe the sort of drastic look of the film, because when you do see it in Blu-ray, it is drastic, like even in comparison to films that come out today, not because of clarity, but just because of like the frame rate, how it looks super liquidy and smooth. But when I first watched that, or sorry, before that, when it first came out, sorry, I meant to say, HD screens weren't really properly proliferated at that point. Remember, you used to have HD ready, and we're talking 2004, so not everybody would have been watching that on an HD screen.
No.
So unless you went to go to the cinema, I think that wouldn't have been as much of a big deal.
Well, I think obviously I don't know when I seen it, so I don't know if I seen it when I was 13, so let's call it maybe 14, right? So I'm not like, I'm not the kind of the movie kind of Yoda that I am now. So I think this is maybe the first film I maybe noticed cinematography and like photography in a film.
Ah, sure.
Because obviously, like, we know we notice it now in everything that we watch, but back then I just thought, this is different. This is really, really different.
It looks like, is really it interesting.
Looks like,
aye.
A documentary.
Aye, there's that element to it as
And I just noticed that, and I think that stuck with me, and I think it's why I love it.
But do you remember having any reaction to the picture, the clarity of the image, or?
I don't know. I would say so. Probably not as much, but it's definitely so strong that it comes through in anything.
Aye, how about you, Roscoe?
Well, first you need to remember that it's not all been shot.
That's
on
right.
These Viper cameras.
We can tell when it changes.
A lot of the kind of indoor stuff is just done on 30mm.
It's in particular that the external car shots, I think, are mostly
you can really
see
it. Absolutely.
It's really, I think, mostly it was using it for the kind of landscape kind of shots, and apparently it was given a kind of deeper focus, showing the kind of lights of the city in a better way. And for all the people who were kind of nerdy at the time, they must have absolutely loved it, because it's kind of shown.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Shown this like so differently than anything else done before, and he must have loved it as well, because he's like, he loves cities and stuff like that, you know. And you can tell how popular it got, because those, when I was watching this again, those helicopter shots, you see near enough the exact same, like, so the following the car, maybe not as precise, but in Zodiac, I mean, it's more precise you know, it's going through these kind of grid streets.
That's
and
that,
everything.
So that was another thing I was going to ask. Do we know some of the other films that have
used
this?
The same camera?
Zodiac was one.
And it used that same overhead shot, which was quite cool.
I can totally see it now as well.
You know some of the others, Roscoe?
I'm not sure some of the others, but this was the kind of, as it was coming in, and the big thing that, like, kind of, because this kind of HD, because it was, it took so long to come in because digital took so long to catch up with the quality. And when it did, it became so much easier, because like David Fincher says that he could sit and edit Zodiac using like basic software on his Apple computer.
Yeah.
You know, and back in the day, they'd film dailies. They'd film all the stock and then they'd go and watch the dailies and see what they'd shot that day.
That's that, eh?
And sometimes it could be absolutely fucking useless.
Aye, that's it. Whereas, that's why they used to end up taking, you know, whereas, 2 years to make a film.
Right? Nowadays they can literally film something and watch it back there and then. And say,
you're
not
sticking bits of film together.
No. I did notice quite a lot of shots where it was, there is a, I mean, I don't know, you have to remember that this, like, every sort of camera, I suppose, it is different, even if it says that it's the same specs or whatever, right? There are elements to this that I think, like, especially with movement and stuff like that you notice that are quite jarring. I think, actually, it's almost... There's a realism to it, which is it almost becomes an artistic effect in a sense, because it's very like clear and dry and real, and you feel as if you're there. But that kind of takes you out of your comfort zone a wee bit, because you're so used to watching films that don't have that, like, almost as if there's no screen between you and the... That's what this feels like. It's quite strange.
I can see why there's not been that many that
they
use that camera,
like,
because...
maybe not wanted to use it, because it feels like you're...
If you use that camera, you want you're definitely wanting a certain look. And Zodiac's a good example, because it's try to be gritty and again, like a documentary. You see all these murder documentaries now, and like that could be one
true crime stuff.
There
does seem to be, there is almost like a kind of a grain to this. It's like a haze. It's definitely good. A unique look, even when you compare it to stuff like Zodiac, is unique, and it's just visually really, really.
I don't think any other film looks like it, like, at all, and that's like an unbelievable achievement.
Neither can I really. It's kind of stood out on its own in terms of like what, even if you put those cameras aside, and like, I mean, you can go buy the camera and make the film. It says a lot that this film has stayed so relevant and been so well thought of, considering it's completely unique. look.
Aye, it could have been released last year.
Aye,
for sure.
Mm-hmm. Aye, oh definitely, absolutely, man.
And Tom Cruise was still looking so.
Yeah.
So would Jamie Foxx, to be fair.
So, Public Enemies, you mentioned.
Yep.
That used it.
Yeah.
Again,
Zodiac, obviously.
Again, like you can tell.
Aye. Mm-hmm. Curious Case of Benjamin Button.
I've seen that. Fincher, obviously.
Yep.
Really liked it. And the Miami Vice
film.
Don't start.
And the Miami Vice.
Oh god! Well, see, I think that's definitely the closest. Because that looks the same, but it's in a different kind of bit more colourful.
Of course, this is mostly dark. Darkness. Aye. So something I'm not usually a big fan of in these types of films is superfluous intellectual mumbo jumbo. However, I'm not really completely sure where I stand on this, so let's just talk about it. So there's obviously underlying themes in the film, including but not limited to morality, fate, trauma, life and death, the meaning or lack thereof of existence. Martin, what do we think about it in this particular case with Collateral? Is it alright or is it bang out of order?
It's definitely alright, but it takes a few viewings to see him, because like the first few times you watch it, you're just watching it for fucking hell, Tom Cruise is so cool and this film is awesome. But then you watch it a few times and then it's just chock full of them. But I don't think it's like...
I think it's a bit on the nose though, don't you?
Nah, it probably is a bit on the nose, but it doesn't bother me.
Roscoe?
Because it's basically like a character study. It could be a play. Because just the two of them in a theatre and in a back seat. And
would definitely go and see a fucking... like
fucking right.
Aye, 100%.
Because if you think about it, an action film, half the film's them sitting in a car talking.
Exactly, aye.
So I think you need room for stuff like that. Otherwise, what are they going to be talking about?
Imagine going to see that, didn't it? Fucking Motherwell Theatre. Fucking...
Tom Cruise staying in the fucking...
amazing.
That's the day they're running. There's always a danger, like when you watch films and you want to kind of go kind of deep into it, that you're going to see things that just, you know, the director's just getting, it's just a happy coincidence, you know. Some of them are quite happy, like, and they'll say, if that's what you, if you take anything from it, then that's good, like, battering, fine. There's other people that will just swear at you and tell you to fuck off and don't be stupid. There's loads of things. I mean, I think all the fate, all that kind of angle in life and death, I think that's all meant. But then you can kind of dig further, like, if you wanted, and you could kind of say, right, okay, is there, like, comments on, like, kind of class?
Totally.
You know?
Being a product of your environment, like, Cruise growing up with his dad beating him and all that.
It's trauma.
A major reason why
which is like a wide and varied kind of reason or social shaping factor in general, which is...
that's definitely a trope when it comes to movie 100%, assassins.
100%, aye.
There's some people think there's a kind of like a post 9/11 spin in this as well, you know, where Max is the kind of average US citizen and he's kind of oblivious to what goes on around about him, same as, you know, what Vincent says. And then the moment that body comes crashing down on him, it's like the realization that, right, you know, this stuff
could happen
is right,
yeah,
and about him, you know.
Because Vincent is kind of like the guy who's forcing him to like sort of think this way, like, this could happen, this is real life, wake the fuck up, blah blah blah, and like he's happy to be, you know, ignorant's the wrong word, he's happy to be oblivious
He might not be totally happy in his job and he wants to do the limo hang and all that, but he's been making excuses and all that. He's like, oh, you need this, you need that and all that. He's been doing it for 12 years, so he's quite happy just bobbing along.
I think everyone can kind of relate to the fact that some sort of traumatic experience or whatever, I think that's maybe this is maybe the kind of duality of the film, which is that they're trying to, you know, the trauma theme, where you can have a traumatic experience that can either make you go in Tom Cruise's direction or can make you go in the direction of chasing your dreams and turning yourself around and seeing the life, ironically seeing the world for what it actually is, but using it as a good thing to bet yourself and blah blah blah. So this film is showing you that happening to Jamie Foxx.
Mm-hmm.
He's having this traumatic experience, but it's reframing things for him in such a way that he's going to become better.
It's impressive considering that's what over the space of like 8 hours or something.
You do forget that.
I mean, we've kind of mentioned it's almost like a therapy session, you know, and
sitting in the seat. And
but Max does see, as I say, like kind of Tom Cruise is leading it, and Max sees, whether or not like he's an evil person, he sees aspects of his personality and his
definitely
outlook in life and everything that he wants for himself. You know what I mean? He wants to have that kind of go and do things and be a master of his own fate. And I mean, it's quite funny that most of the time he's speaking to him, it's through a mirror. But that gets turned as well at the end when Max starts questioning Vincent's kind of worldview.
Yep.
You know, what if I was to put a gun to your head and ask you what that guy over there was thinking, you couldn't do it. And he starts panicking, and that's the big turning point.
Mm-hmm.
It's a clever film.
Oh, definitely, man.
Now it's time for
pure quality.
And what else is it time for?
Pure shite.
That's what it is.
Pure quality and pure shite. And I'm gonna mix it up a wee bit here.
I was thinking about this all day, by the way, right? I have there's got to be an overlap, because I just feel as if we've been talking about this film for years, right?
Aye.
And well, I feel as if there's only two things that it could be.
Yeah, well, right? that's why I'm going to go fucking first, right?
Right, go for it. Marty's in first.
So, my pure quality is... Right, do you want to see if you can guess it then?
Well, it's only two things it can be.
Okay,
it depends how specific you're being.
Right, my pure quality is...
It's either...
Let me see.
Right, okay.
My pure quality is the alley shooting.
Oh, you homie, where's the... Is that my briefcase?
Aye, not necessarily that part, but the yo homie, where's my briefcase part when he takes the guy down and draws and kills the two guys. That's
also my pure quality as well, so there you go.
Yes, hey. I knew it would be. I fucking knew it would be. And as another wee kind of cool side note to that, apparently, I know I think it could be bullshit, but I choose to believe it, is that Tom Cruise was so impressive at drawing his gun and handling the gun that LAPD actually uses it in footage to train fucking cops.
Is that no? I thought that was...
That was Terminator?
No. I thought it was Val Kilmer in Heat.
That's how to hold a gun, I'm pretty sure.
Right, okay.
I'm sure, because he's got an assault rifle, whereas Tam's got a wee Glock.
So Michael Mann, he's not actually making films, he's just making training videos.
Instructional videos for the LAPD.
And how to kill black people.
Oh, hey.
Well.
What?
What?
There you go.
Your homie.
You got my briefcase?
I'll put it in.
And the size of...
Size of...
His dick? No. Well, that I know. How loud the gunshots are and just how quick he is and that, you're just like fucking...
Right, the other guy's still struggling with his in his belt and he's like, too late, mate.
It's the first bit of direct violence you see in the film.
That's true,
when you get to see just how capable
he is. And it may have been very impressive, but at the end of the day, it fucks him a wee bit, because it was so good that Ruffalo goes like that, this is a professional.
It's a professional.
Right, so do you want to talk about it or we skip you?
I mean, the cat's at the bag, that was my pure quality, so I'm just going to fire straight out to Ross here so that we can go and talk about some other cool shit. So Ross, what was your pure quality?
Well, again, it's, I can narrow it down, but I mean, it's the nightclub. Let's narrow it down to two specific bits that I love. One's the leg break.
I'm going to put the sound in. I love the fact that the foley for that must be. That's clearly a bit of celery, isn't it? It's got to be a carrot or an overripe carrot that's got loads of moisture or a bit of celery, because the sound it makes is horrific.
it's like an inverted knee.
Just
splat
the leg in half.
Sick.
So bad.
So either that bit or...
Penalty of Rangers.
um, the other guy that he kills, where, I mean, you don't see him doing this, but he stamps on the guy's head and see the look on his face when he does it. It's like,
do you know what? He's inconvenienced.
It's insane.
It's like, it's amazing what he does, because it's like, he's kind of like, he's fucking, I have to do this.
Inconvenience is a good way to put it.
I'd say he's more like kind of, he's like pumped up. He's like, it reminded me of, like, to relate it to a kind of comedy, for him to watch He's Always Sunny, when Dennis gives his golden god speech.
It's very similar, yeah. You and see then the neck bulge,
the grimace.
Yes.
I also love the kill when he's lying on the floor with the gun between his legs. That's fucking cool.
Stabbing the guy in the leg. That's another great scream.
Aye, because he's in like a three-way, can he?
That's right.
Try and grab something, and he pulls a wee dagger out, and
even the way that whole kind of like sequence ends when Ruffalo's character gets killed, just
out of nowhere.
Yeah,
that.
So it's time for
pure shite.
You can go first this time,
right? Okay,
because mine's just pretty shit.
I mean, I said we were going to get on to it, so listen. The pure quote and pure shite section is where we really get to have our own opinions, so please hold back your bullshit with this, right?
Fucking defense.
So, it is the scene where he kills the jazz guy. Like, that whole thing, with him having an interest in jazz, and that, I felt the whole thing was pointless. Like, he could have took that out of the film, and it would have been totally fine, and don't you fucking say elsewise, because, seriously, it was just a... Filmmakers love to throw jazz in just as a thing of like, oh, he's also an artistic intellectual and what. It's like, just because he's a guy that kills people, can he not just be a guy that kills people? Like, they have to put this fucking thing in.
To be fair, if it's going to be music, though, you wouldn't want him to be like loving disco or something, you know?
I would love that. Imagine he killed fucking one of the guys for ABBA.
I reckon that would be like, there'd be some, I don't know. See, if it was just a fleeting thing, by very fleeting, I mean like he went to like a, I don't know, like a polka night or something like that. And it's just like, I just really like this. And then it just cuts to something else as a bit of comedy. But the fact that they have to have this in-depth conversation about Miles Davis, and it's like, just throwing all the Wikipedia, like, oh, where did Miles Davis go? Like everybody and their fucking granny knows he went to Juilliard. It's like, it's extremely annoying. And then it's like, oh no, he actually did this. And it fucking does my nothing. Because you literally hear you hear this in every film where jazz is brought up. You hear all of those tropes, and it does my fucking tits in.
Do you want to know why it's not pointless? You might be right, and everyone you're saying there, do you want to know why it's not pointless? But because Cruise is amazing in that scene. He's fucking terrifying.
I'm not saying, like, see the kill and all that? Like, I'm not saying that isn't cool or whatever. I'm just saying that entire section, it's just that annoying wee left turn that they put in to make it, to try and make
but
the
But are you more annoyed
interesting.
That it's that, or are you more annoyed that it's jazz?
Or both, like, they're equally annoying, because...
Nah, because he's too good in it to take it. Like, but, yeah, right, it could have been anything, though, like, I get more annoyed that
it's just... And also, I don't know if it was maybe a... I could be totally wrong, but it'd be interesting if it was a sort of a deliberate thing for Michael Mann if he's got to put jazz in. I doubt it, because of how superficial the information was about jazz and Miles Davis in general, but about it being in LA, because like the whole thing is associated with New York, like that era anyway of bebop and Charlie Parker and Miles Davis and all that stuff is associated with New York, like extremely. So I don't know if there was maybe a thing there with that, that we're going to a smoky jazz club, but it's in LA. Maybe.
I don't know. I mean, I think jazz is starting to become a thing. And earlier it has been.
Oh, no, definitely. 100% has. I'm just, I don't mean now, I mean that era. So they were talking about Miles Davis, so the 60s.
Oh, right. Okay, kind of stuff get you.
Was an entirely Greenwich Village. And
what I took for it was that Crenshaw was some kind of jazz hotbed or something back in the day.
I mean, I don't know. I just feel as if that bit, I feel as if Big Baz, Barry Shabaka, shout it. If you're listening, big man, I feel as if stuff like that, you know, I don't know how to feel about it, but a wee bit like, let's just get
his realization in his face, but it's
that is pretty cool. But you know, I don't know.
No, I'm not annoyed.
The way he sort of like the talking about Miles Davis walking and that kind of stuff like that, just doesn't sit right with me at all, man. It's like, just deliver it all matter of fact. Like, if you're the crusty old jazz guy, like, you, just the way he talks about it seems to be a wee bit, like, I don't know, it's a bit forced. Do you know what I mean? Like,
have you ever considered that he's lying, though?
Well, aye, maybe not. No, I haven't, no. I haven't.
I think that's the thing you're meant to decide whether he's talking shite.
Aye, perhaps, and that's maybe the reason that Cruz is kind of having that interaction with him is because he's actually going, ah, are you still full of shit, mate?
Aye, because this guy...
Back in the day, are you still full of shit?
This guy's made his career through having known him.
Yeah.
And I think that's you're meant to decide.
I mean, I know what you're saying. And maybe that's the thing. But I just feel as if you could have took that entire scene out of the film and it wouldn't have
been because he's too good, man. He's so good, man. Right, Roscoe.
Again, I know we try and be more specific, so I'm going to say this one, but it's not. I was just going to say the police in general.
Oh, the fucking...
Because every time it cuts to that, it's just like, right, can we just get back to... Kind of Vincent and Max now, please.
I love it. I love them just get like in so many of these films, right? See whatever the group of like the task force that's dealing with like surveillance, they're just in like a like random warehouse somewhere, watching. They've just got hundreds of screens set up in some like fucking back room, or, warehouse facility.
They've also got amazing microphones pointed directly at the doorman in that nightclub.
I love that, man. It's just that is a callback into it to like fucking 80s stuff and all that. Where like how the fuck are they setting this up? Like there was no wireless microphones or anything back there. How are they doing this? Like just some guy across the street, like you say, a big boom microphone. I've got you, lad.
so that's like more a general. So my specific one is the we've mentioned it before, the Black Peter monologue. And
I think he's phoned that in, man.
I think Bardem's fine, but part of my problem with it is that Felix knows. I mean, okay, he doesn't know that Max isn't Vincent, but he knows that Vincent is a contract killer,
yes.
Ex special services.
Yep,
he's been doing this for 6 years. You know, the guy is very, very dangerous. And he starts telling him, starts asking him if he believes in Humpty Dumpty, and then tells him this daft story and everything.
Do you know, Roscoe, I agree with you.
Fucking furious.
Do you know why, though? Shop. Do you know why? Because people don't talk like that.
It does kind of bug. See, especially in stuff. I don't mind that.
Humans don't talk like that to each other. And like, yeah.
See, when you're watching James Bond and stuff like that, you know, you expect right.
The villain totally, to be a bit verbose.
But when you're trying to ground something,
Bardem does reality, it in Skyfall when he's talking about the rats in the barrel and all that, and you're like, ah, this is great. This is Bond. This didn't need it at all.
No. When it's you're trying to have something.
Real,
yeah.
I didn't like it. Yeah.
So you know, I'll maybe take back my criticism.
That scene is good, though.
Maybe I'm a bit harsh to say that Bardem himself phoned it in, but I think they've tried. Maybe this is just something that's kind of been almost misdirected, miscalculated, because I feel as if they've clearly said to him, "You're a," because see his delivery and everything. It's almost like Anton Chigurh, isn't it? See if you listen to how he speaks in this. It's the softness, and he only really raises his voice a wee bit to say fucking furious to him, right? But it's the softness, and they've kind of said to him, look, you're super soft-spoken, but you're terrifying, blah, 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 and you're the boss. And it's just no quite came across
that way. I know exactly why they've done it.
It looks as if he couldn't give a fuck.
I know exactly why they've done it. They've basically tried to... They're basically going, right, Bardem's going to be in this for 10 minutes. How can we give him a personality in 10 minutes?
I make him nonchalant. Aye,
we'll make him say this, and just people don't speak like that and stuff.
I know what you mean. Either
it happens
in loads of things.
It's a screenwriting thing, I think.
It totally is, and it doesn't translate.
Somebody's just like, oh, this will sound really
so
cool.
Much.
I mean, it's the whole Maximus Decimus Meridius thing.
Fuck off.
Right.
No, fuck off.
He pulled that off.
Aye, he did. Pull you off in a minute.
Oh.
Has that?
Have we done? Is that us all done pure shite then?
No.
Then.
It always does this to me.
Sorry, man.
Mine's is Max trying to get in contact with Annie at the end, and the phone battery goes up.
Why?
Because this film's it's too intelligent for a daft thing like that.
He steals the phone off a guy. So? It's not his phone.
I know, but
why would it be fully charged?
No, but it stops at the
right.
The vital moment.
No, really, that though, I would think the more annoying thing is that the whole time he's looking at a low battery, my battery, he's not running towards the thing to save her. He only decides to do that when the phone dies. So he's willing to gamble. He's like, he actually shows you the wee bar, like, at nothing, basically, and he's still talking to her. But rather than using that time on the phone to run towards and help her, he's still stood miles away, and he waits till it dies to run. That's more annoying to me.
No, it's the film's too... It's a bit cheap for a film like this, I'll say. But there is a few things. I'm not saying these are bad things, but... Vincent makes some stupid decisions in
100%.
This.
100%. Yeah.
Like, see, at the very end, I was thinking, why does he turn all the lights off in the fucking building? It's not as if he can see in the fucking dark.
Aye, I know.
Is that not in part, though, to stop her phoning out?
The phone lines are different.
Hangman, I think he died.
He's using a fucking axe to cut through them. I don't think he's being very...
Also, shout out to him jumping through the gas and falling in the chair. That was funny.
That's mad, that bit.
Looks so.
It looks like he potentially, like, fucking breaks his hip.
He probably didn't, but it's true, isn't he? Just fucking...
Aye.
Continues on.
Just injected, like, I don't know, fetus aye. DNA into him to
fetus
to heal
DNA.
It.
DNA, fucking hell, man.
He's probably saying that right now as we speak, isn't he?
Well, he's doing something.
Stem cell milkshake.
Aye. Right, so
injecting it in his eyeballs.
So you've clearly got some other cool shit you want to mention.
I just want to wrap through, like, there's... some certain things that I love. Let's just rattle through, right? I love the guy, the Asian guy at the Fever nightclub, the boss guy. While this mayhem is going on, just sitting in his seat the whole time, like a boss for a video game. You've got to fight through all the henchmen, not like to get to him, and then he's still sitting there, just gets shot.
Shot in the fucking face.
Like he's not even made an attempt. In fact, it actually shows you him sort of groaning and stuff, like trying to move. He's like, and it. He can't even get up. So they've tried to make it look like he's so fat and he can't even get up out of his seat and he just sits there and takes the bullets, man.
I'll give a shout out to the car crash, man. That is a proper cool stunt. That is a top of the stunt.
That is good.
Full marks for not going like stupid with it and making it slow motion and stuff like that.
Or explode or something.
Yeah.
It was like a proper car crash.
Mm-hmm. And Cruise looks fucked up after it.
I read, and again, this is probably bullshit, but apparently the two of them were in that car when it
fuck off.
That's what I thought.
Wait, Tom Cruise, no way, man. In fact, he was probably fucking driving it.
He's like, I lost it, aye.
Nah, no way, man.
He's driving it, he's dressed up like Jamie Foxx.
I know. Blacked up. Method actor.
Please let it be true.
Nah, that's not true, man. Fucking hell.
That's out by the way.
They did an Always Sunny and swapped just for that one scene.
Oh, man.
Riggs.
Come on, mate. Murder.
So fucking good. Right, other cool shit that happens. We've talked about Cruise's gun technique. Fucking awesome.
I liked him hanging off the back of the
train. That was cool.
Oh, that you could tell it was to him, though.
He proper goes full Terminator.
My dad said that. Mm-hmm. He says it turns into a horror film at the end.
It kind of does.
And it does.
Because his whole expression, his face changes. It becomes more like... It's almost like a... Like a Mike Myers / T-1000, kind of like, I'm just...
Unstoppable.
Except he's very stoppable. And you know, I mean, that's not... I think the whole fucking... I think the end scene's great, man.
It's very, very unique. It's not Max suddenly becoming this insane hero. He's just got lucky. It's fate. Like we talked about. He couldn't even work the gun.
Let's be honest, I mean, like...
Couldn't even work the safety in the gun.
How... I'm surprised none of his picked for the pure quality. It was just the moment to do it. Like
sat down.
No, not even that. Just when his body gives out and he's not got the strength to put the cartridge in. So he's about to shoot him and kill him, but his body gives out and he just drops the cartridge.
And the wee throwback to the story told nice as well.
Aye, of course. If you don't, I mean, like the. It's almost like one of those things. Like, see, when you rewatch this film and you like and you hear him first tell that story, you're kind of like. It kind of gets you excited for it because you know where it's going. I love films like that where they put that thing in early. As long as it's done right, it's fucking great, man. The music it plays at the end is fucking incredible.
It's really class, man.
So good, man.
Can I say one thing I'm really glad they didn't do the end? It would have really cheapened it and pissed me off massively if Max and Annie had gotten into a taxi at the end of that film.
Oh, yeah. No, you're absolutely right.
Or kissed or something.
Aye.
But even getting into a taxi, that would have just really annoyed me.
do you know that we haven't even talked about the main fate hanging it, and that's the fact that Vincent walked away for the cab at the start and he brings him back.
That's true, aye.
He was scoping the place out, though.
What do you mean?
Vincent.
No, I'm talking about Vincent went up to the cab to try and get Jamie Foxx's attention.
He
went to get our cab and James went,
no, I'll get you.
You get you.
Yeah. I mean, and countless other things, really. I mean, it says that this is one of these films that just has on the sort of macro level just lots of cool shit happening.
It's one of the coolest films ever.
A feast for the eyes, shall we say. I'm going to start this section here where we're going to rate the film just by saying one thing, which is that as we reach our 35th episode, I think our listeners are going to have to strap in and get okay with the idea that we're probably going to have to re-rate everything we've done.
That's fine. We should do that on it.
And we're probably going to have to change our rating system as well, because I feel as if 0.5s are not enough. We need to go to an IMDb style, like a one decimal point all the way up.
Happy with
because
that.
Because I'm really... it's difficult, man. It's too hard. So this is a film that just seems to be writing a thing that I really struggle with, because... I don't want to be too harsh on it, because I'll be honest with you, as I'm about to deliver my rating, I feel dirty saying this out loud. It's not as good as I remember it to be. But I mean this for sort of basic things. I think it is quite deliberately, obviously, sort of simple in the sense, and there's the sort of extraneous elements of the film are brought in to enhance the central plot. But just like I said about the jazz thing, I feel as if if it was going to be ballsy enough just to be this one thing, I think it should have just been that one thing. And having the fucking jazz and all the mumbo jumbo about fate and all that literally said out loud in the film, and I don't know how I feel that. These are just off the top of my head sort of examples. I do feel as if that cheapened it ever so slightly. I still absolutely adore it. And I think the simplicity of the film is probably the thing I like most. It's perfect length. It's like, 120, something like that?
No.
2 hours.
2 hours? Oh my God. Well, it doesn't feel like it.
Yeah.
It there's not enough happening in the peripheral to really get in the way of things, but the visuals, the soundtrack, it's just one of these films that has this unique sort of thing, as we've said a lot tonight, so... After much consideration, I'm going to give it an 8 flat. For the reasons that, let's say, points are taken off for Trailer Park Boys level policemanship. there's a gunfight, we must go away now. And various other moments of just ineptitude. Actual police, apparently like armed fucking special ops people, deciding it's a great idea to just go in and have a shootout in a nightclub.
They also they also know what cab they're both in.
Exactly.
And there's loads of police cars that they could buy them.
I mean, I'm nitpicking a bit there, but like, I feel as if sometimes the ethical sort of like the morality, the fables, the stuff that's the allegories just on the top level that are a wee bit on the nose for me. Like, I'd prefer that shit to be hidden a bit deeper rather than one of the characters literally just fucking talking about it. So, still, I mean, 100% fucking love it. And, like I said, it's like, it's up there. It was at a time in our lives, wasn't it, where it was like, such an important film to see, a film like that, where it's like, it's all the shit that we like, but it's different at the same time, and it's unique. So, 8 is where I'm going to go. Not you, Roscoe.
It's definitely one of my favourite films, probably in my top 20.
Oh, wow.
I mean, just thinking now, it's probably the first time I've watched in about 10 years, and it's better than I remembered it. It takes something, I mean, they even joke, they mention the Twilight Zone in it at one point, but it takes something like high concept, and it really elevates it.
Mm-hmm.
It looks brilliant, the acting's good. The only things, I mean, the jazz thing doesn't bother me. I'm quite happy with that. The police, I mean, do you know what? Like, seeing recent years and stuff like that, I think it's probably this is the way they've depicted the police is probably aged better. You know, you can't always have them being heroes and, you know, they're absolutely amazing at everything because they're just human, they make mistakes. And the kind of the themes and stuff, when it's mostly two people talking, you know, stuff like that is going to come out. But there's loads of stuff to read into it. I could go home and watch it again tonight. That's how much I like it. I'm giving it a 9.5.
Oh my god!
And it's just because like those kind of segues to the police, it's just I've no interest in it. Just take me back to those two. In the same way, Javier Bardem scene. Nothing against him; he's fine. I just that bit of writing just annoying. So minor.
Wow,
minor failure.
Only enough to take a half point off you.
Yep.
Jeez, oh, Marty boy.
It's in my top 20 as well, Roscoe. It's one of my favourite films. It's one of those films I think someone wrote it for me. It's just I could watch Cruise playing Vincent
ten hours straight. Oh, it's phenomenal.
Like he's so goddamn watchable, man. And it just shows you how good Jamie Foxx is that you even notice Jamie Foxx. Because he could easily be blended into the background with how good Tom Cruise is, but the both of them are just brilliant, man. And that's kind of the on the level stuff, like about how cool they are and all that, and which is fine. But when you go into the deeper stuff, like I don't mind the stuff about the themes and all that. But I'm kind of just looking for the acting, and like I know I've said this a million times in this podcast that. It's characters that make me like films and conversations.
I know, fair play,
and fuck the action and all that. The best parts of the film is when it's the two of them talking in the car.
Yeah,
and you can just have fucking 2 hours of that, and I'd have loved it.
Aye.
The police. I agree with you, Ross, but at the same time, I don't want them to do anything because
they get in the way.
I do. you don't want them to get in the way. Their story, whether they're going to save one or arrest Vincent or something. You just don't want them. But they still need to be in it because you can't have a guy running about orphan folk. I'll give it a 9.5 as well.
Oh my god, that's
and that's with me holding fucking back.
Interesting. That's a kind of almost like a role reversal here, isn't it? Where it's like I'm the one scoring a film less that we all thought we were going to go in, and we usually do it the kind of other way about. We're like. Well, we're all guilty of it, to be fair, but...
Like when he fucked it with Predator.
What did you give Predator?
I think I gave it an 8.
An 8? Wow.
Still fucking wake up my cold sweat about
that. Oh, man. Anyway, there you go. That's your scores in the doors, folks.
It's that time again.
Uh-oh. Insert jingle here. Can't get one for that.
Time for frustration and radio silence.
For this one, I think it'll be somewhere.
As we play I'm Smarticus.
Because it's not a film we...
You'd need to look for weird shit, wouldn't you? Because there's...
Well, we should see the shit I've got for the next
one. No, good.
To be fair to you, most of the stuff in this, I think pretty much all of it is dialogue-based.
Oh my god, right, okay.
There's maybe one thing that's not, right?
So okay.
Let's go. I've got... Martin's answered one of these ones already, so I've got 9.
Okay, oh fuck. 9 questions. Oh, Jesus Christ, right. Strap in, folks.
Here we go.
Yep.
What type of purse does Annie have?
Bodega.
Yes, it's one of Barry. What brochure is the car?
Mercedes.
S-Class. Mercedes S-Class.
I mean, I don't know. You can argue about that yourselves. I mean,
can you just say Mercedes? I knew it was going to be a Mercedes S-Class.
It's an S-Class. I'd say that's too bad.
Fucking no chance.
You can't just say Mercedes.
And you can't because I don't know what he was going to say.
And then I said the actual answer, which is Mercedes S-Class.
Nonsense.
How many times a day does Max go on vacation?
Dozen.
Hi. 3. This will be just whoever can answer the quickest. In Vincent's story, how long was the body on the MTA?
6 hours.
Yep. What's that now? 4 you've got?
I usually end up throwing it away though, so I don't know. Wish you hadn't said that.
Here we go. How many taxi cabs are supposedly...
4,000.
Yes.
Fucking hell, mate.
Jeez, all right. In the hospital, what floor is Max's mother?
Fourth.
No.
Oh, shit.
Max's mother on.
Fucking... Five.
I think I don't know. Is it 14th or something like that? 15th?
No, third floor.
Fuck off.
And Ruffalo goes to the fifth floor.
So that's what it is.
Number... I can't mean what number this is, but anyway. How did Vincent's father's
liver
die?
Disease.
Liver disease. That shouldn't be in it, because I said that in the actual pod.
Oh, did you? I wasn't sure if that was in it. Said that.
Exactly.
You can have that, man.
Yeah, that's fair.
Well, thanks. Did he get a granny, thank fuck?
What final discount does Max offer?
25%. 35%.
Are we getting him? Are we letting him answer twice?
Oh, fuck yeah.
I think it's no first answer first. He says 25 and 45.
Okay. What floor is Annie's office 14th. On, Barry? There you go, Baz. Winner, winner.
What was that score, Ross?
I have no idea, but I know you absolutely pumped him.
6-2, I think.
That was your best performance ever.
That was impressive.
Right, he's about to see if you can get anyone's acid.
Go for it.
What's Max?
Oh, by the way, no. Hold on a second. I'm Smarticus.
I thought you'd forget about that. What's Max's surname?
Doricky.
It sounds weird.
Doricky?
Aye, that's fine. What's the name of Max's business?
Island Donors.
Yeah.
What's the taxi number to phone the taxi?
It's three numbers. 469.
In fact, I think here's a better one. What's the number of Max's taxi?
469.
5102.
I'm getting 469.
What's the address of the first kill?
Oh, for fuck's sake. No.
You're 139 Union Street. I'm surprised.
You should have fell out with me if I'd done any of that.
Oh,
I'm surprised you didn't say this one. How much money does he offer him?
600 quid.
$600.
Bucks.
Yeah. And an extra 100 if
an extra 100,
he can run for the plane.
When they're at the petrol station and he says to go to the jazz club, he mentions three jazz players who played at this place.
Okay.
Just give me any of them.
Chet Baker
was one.
Chet Baker.
He was the only one that I'd heard of before.
Dizzy Gillespie?
No. Dexter Gordon.
Dexter Gordon was
Charlie Mingus.
Charlie Mingus.
What's the name of the place that Javier Bardem's in?
Cowboy
place in
Dorado or something.
El Rodeo? Yeah.
Club Bueno?
Oh, right. I thought it was El Rodeo as well.
I thought it was, wasn't it? Yeah.
Maybe it is.
Sick. That was not bad.
Mate, over the past few weeks, you've definitely been studying.
I've not been studying. I think I've just probably been drinking less, and I can get on the draw quicker.
No, you're very quick.
Aye. That's what happens when I've had only two beers.
Wow. Don't just drink more then.
There we go. Guys, I'm pleased to announce that somebody's actually been in touch. Our old pal Eddie has sent us an email.
Nice.
So
Eddie.
That's Venom.
That's
pretty good, isn't it?
Hello, Eddie. Thanks for getting in touch. So, Eddie writes, "Hi, guys. How are things?" I would say...
Are you all right?
Fine. Aye. We're still here.
Thanks for asking.
Thanks for asking. At least somebody cares. You know what I mean? I'm glad there have been new episodes of the podcast. Loved the one about The Matrix. You're about the only one there, Eddie. Regarding the shit show for Batman and Robin, I had fun listening to it and hearing you guys slag it off. For a while, I would have avoided watching Batman and Robin... Us too, like the plague. These days, my verdict is so bad it's good. Eddie, you could say it's shittily acclaimed, then.
Eddie's in my side.
If you were looking for suggestions for an episode, have you ever thought about doing an episode about The Godfather? Have we ever thought about it? Yeah, I don't know how I really vocalised it, though. Considering you've done The Matrix Trilogy, I thought it'd be cool to dedicate an episode or two to The Godfathers. I would like that. Regards, Eddie. Great suggestion, obviously. It's the elephant in the room, probably, at this point. I don't know. What's your thoughts on it?
On doing an episode, then, or on the film?
Or just...
It's
all right. About how would we do it? How would we approach it? I mean, it's a tough one to chew, isn't it?
You're just going to be fucking...
It's three hours long, and, mm-hmm. I mean...
These episodes are already about an hour and 40.
Is there anything more...
To say
about it.
Do people
like our opinions that much?
Fucking right.
Should we find a way of doing it? Maybe we'll do a version where we just talk about all the things that are crap about it.
Can Martin do a good Brando impression?
Do you want me to do it right now?
I've got some oranges through there.
Do you?
Is it
cotton wool?
Cotton wool,
not oranges.
No, he's the orange at the end.
That's all right, actually. Yeah. That's pretty good. I'll give him a pass there. No, I think the short answer is we'll do it at some point in some way, shape, or form.
You need to get yourself.
We just don't know whether you guys would be up for listening to us talking about such iconic territory, and probably for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But no, we'll definitely get into it. Any more suggestions, you know, fire them in. There's probably a lot of those ones. You know, The Godfather, like I said, is the elephant in the room. There's probably a lot of films that fall into that category that we actually just have passed us by this point. Sure. So, you know what I mean? News to us as well.
Anything probably pre-90s or pre-80s probably at this point would be
We're definitely being of our generation, mm-hmm, with our film picks, which is great. But, we need some more ones. So, as always, thanks for getting in touch, Eddie. Nice to hear from you.
Cheers, mate.
So that was Collateral last year. Do you enjoy that one? That was a good one.
Did I?
So I thought it was good, eh?
Much better than Batman and Robin.
It's a better film than Batman and Robin, I'll get you that.
It's a good way to cleanse your old palate, isn't it? Cleanse the palate. What are the palates?
We're coming up for the old festive period, so you can look forward to an episode on that soon, but we'll maybe squeeze a call out before that.
I think so. And once again, thanks for listening.
And Baz, if folk want to get in touch...
To send you hate mail?
To send me hate mail. Or you the night for your jazz push. How the fuck can
they
do that?
They would be able to do that on the email address as follows: uglypulpodyssey@gmail.com.
Or send abuse on Twitter, because that's all the rage.
Definitely.
Make an anonymous account and just send Martin abuse.
Yep.
So, you know, hopefully, like Tom Cruise on the train at the end, we'll just begin running.
Has dick? No!
For 100 years!
That's what I meant to piss. We've been running for
100 years!
Get a fucking label.
I hope we won't be doing that first one.
Fuck's sake.
We'll be on the train.
For 100 years!
Yep.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
Anyway, I really need to label my keyboard, so see you next time.
So unprofessional.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.